And happy Wacky Wednesday. It is Wednesday, December 7th, 2016, and time for another edition of Blackbird 9's Breakfast Club. I'm your host, Frederick C. Blackburn, welcoming you all to the show tonight. Blackbird 9's Breakfast Club is proudly sponsored by North Kakalaki Trading Post. That's North Kakalaki Trading Post, goods, services, and solutions for all creatures great and small. And I hope everyone is having a wonderful Wacky Wednesday and a wonderful Wacky Week. We've got a really good show for you lined up tonight. It is the special anniversary show. We have made it 1 year. So big applause to the crew for keeping this ship afloat for that many episodes. So we're real excited about, tonight's show. Very proud of it. Have some wonderful guests for you lined up. At the bottom of the first hour, Mr. Dennis Fecho from Inside the Eye Live and also the Illuminatus Observer will be joining us. And for those of you familiar with the show, you know that Mr. Fecho not only has been one of our Pathfinders guests on the show, coming in for the Big 9 at 9 segment and doing a great job. That's a really good show. That's still one of my strongest shows on the podcast list, is that interview with Mr. Dennis Fecho for the Big 9 at 9. But he was also the very first person to give me a platform or a soapbox, if you will, of any media outlet. So I tried for years and years and years after I got blacklisted to try to get someone to listen to my tale of woe and intrigue, fear and loathing. But Mr. Dennis Fecho was actually the first person to bring me on his show and give me an interview, and then to have me back for a full show, which was pretty amazing. So that's back during the Oracle days. So Mr. Dennis Fecho and I go back a while. I have just incredible respect for his work and just who he is. We call him Troll Slayer for a reason. The man is just amazing. But anyway, so he's going to be with us at the bottom of the hour. And then the second hour, we've got a panel of people coming in for tonight's big segment on a guide to the Jewish question. Originally, it was called the Newbie's Guide to the Jewish Question, but after pre-production meeting, we decided that title was too long, and so we went for the Guide to the Jewish Question. So, oh yes, and so we'll be sure to ask Mr. Fecho about the infamous Bob Tuscan tussle, as it's called. That was quite the turning point in the Overton window. I think that's one of those key events that we will remember, the battle over at Oracle with Bob Tuscan and Dennis Fecho. That was actually the first time I had ever heard one of Mr. Fecho's shows. Somebody over at Mr. Michael Rivero's site, What Really Happened, just kept recommending this guy. Say, "Oh, you're gonna love this guy. He's over on Oracle. You've got to go listen to him." So I just happened to tune in for the first time during that particular event, and I was sold. From then on out, it's like, okay, I like this guy. I like his work. I'm gonna support his work wherever I can. So, but anyway. But second hour, we have a panel, and it still may change, but right now we have confirmed Clint Richardson and Mr. Patrick Jordan are going to be joining us for the Guide to the Jewish Question. And if you're not familiar with their work, Clint Richardson has also been one of our Pathfinders last year's show, came in for the Big 9 at 9. Mr. Patrick Jordan will be new to us tonight, but he has been sending me some of the funniest emails this week getting ready for the show. So I hope you enjoy listening to him. He's got a great sense of humor and a very acute historical knowledge to go with that sense of humor. So we're really looking forward to that. And just a side note, for those who may not be familiar with Clinton Richardson's work, it is not out of disrespect that I don't call him Mr. Clint Richardson. As you all know, I am the proper Southern gentleman, and I always refer to my guests as Mr. or Miss or Mrs. or whatever have you. It's just a sign of respect. But in in Clint Richardson's modeling, he actually has a pretty good argument of why he doesn't like to be called Mr. Clint Richardson. And he, if you go back to that first episode where he was a guest on, he does a really good job of explaining the terms and the labels and from a legal viewpoint. And so that's what's so amazing about his work, is he has such a good grasp on the legal worldview that many of us don't have. Because when you start talking about the rule of law and what that really means from a language perspective and a government modeling perspective and a religious modeling perspective, it takes on a completely different meaning. And so, anyway, so that's just one of the things that I learned about Clint Richardson's work, and that was very, very enlightening. I should say when, given the political climate, but when the meanies finally come and take me away and pry my fingers from my keyboard, I definitely want Clint Richardson on my crew for my legal defense and consulting all my propagandists, you know. So, he just really has a good grasp on, you know, the game theory behind the legal system, I should say. So, with that said, want to give a big shout out to the chat room. If you'd like to join us, you can go out to blackbird9tradingpost.org. That's blackbird9tradingpost.org. And in the upper left-hand corner of the homepage, you'll see three parallel bars. That brings up a menu, and you can go into the podcast lounge where you can listen to the show live on a Spreaker. You can also join the folks in the chat room, as well as lots of other things to click on there in the podcast lounge. We've got a lot of good stuff in there. You can also go to bb9tradingpost.chatango.com to go straight into the Chatango chat room. That's bb9tradingpost.chatango.com. And, whoa, we have just got a bumper crowd this evening for the anniversary show. See here, I see Batman 1488, I see Blowy Ocean, Bryzer 1, Beulah Man, CNRA Archiver. Thank you again for all the help. We started this show project probably a month ago, and just, you know, that we were going to do this show and in this format. And so CNR Archiver was just really instrumental in making tonight's show a reality. I really appreciate all the help on that. George 1951 is out there. Hot Bliss is with us. Lily Valley, always welcome. Nick Donnan's there. South Osman, hello. Glad you could be with us. I'm sure was talking to Mr. Fetcho in pre-production, and it was like 4 a.m. where he was, but he was going to make the show. So really appreciate all the people who are staying up past their bedtimes or getting up early to catch the live show. That always makes me feel good. Zapopper, welcome as always. Thank you again for all the support over at Mamie's. Really appreciate you always posting the Breakfast Club show out there. Got lots of anons tonight, a ton of anons in there. So, as always, welcome to the newbies. First rule of Trading Post, be nice to newbies. Second rule of Trading Post, everyone's a newbie. So, that said, a lot going on this week of Trading Post wise. Currently the weather is a beautiful sunny day today. Yesterday we had glorious, wonderful rain and a couple of days of rain, and if you remember from last week's show, we were talking about all of these forest fighters that were being set. That's best modeling at this point, that these are not organic fires, that these forest fires are synthetic. They are being set. The question is by whom and for what ends. But anyway, it was glorious to get these long, drenching rains in the southeast this week. Even though there was a little bit of flooding in some areas, nothing major. But, you know, any flooding's bad. It's like any fire's bad. There's no such thing as a little flooding or a little fire. You're going to take damage with either of those, and you have to learn how to respect them. But it just really helped bring the forest fire situation under control here in the southeast. Yes, Mr. Nick Donnan. By whom, indeed? Who benefits from forest fires in the southeast? I wonder. So, but, you know, so the rain is nice, but behind the rain is coming a cool front. So we've been scrambling trying to get everyone's furnaces serviced and getting fuel stocked into everyone's tanks and those kinds of things, because this is going to be the first cold snap this weekend. We actually had our first snow up here on the ridgeline Sunday, so it was lovely waking up Sunday morning, and it was a nice dusting of snow that was gone by lunchtime. So that's kind of the perfect snow. You get to see it, but when you actually have to go out and do something, it's already off the road. So that was nice. We got our first little snow of the season on Sunday, but this weekend it's supposed to get down into the lower teens Fahrenheit, so you're looking at sub-zero Celsius temperatures. And so, you know, one of the things, when you're doing elder care and you're taking care of people's property, you know, you've got to have working heating systems. And so we've been really working the last couple of weeks to make sure that everybody's all taken care of and don't have, and we've got backup systems in place, so everybody should be good for this winter. So other local news, and Mr. Dick Donnan is asking any inside info on the NC governor outcome. For those that have been following that very tight and contested race, we did find out that Mr. Pat McCrory did concede the election, and so he will be stepping down. I don't think very many people are happy about that outcome, but that is where we are. And so Roy Cooper will be the governor-elect coming into office for 2017. So that was finally announced, that, you know, Governor McCrory conceded that. So the concern now with the North Carolina dynamic is that you've got Roy Cooper, who is definitely in that what they call the new left, that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and all of these people that are just basically Frankfurt School cultural Marxists that think that they're moving to this brave new world utopia globalist system. He will be sitting as governor, and he's already made it a point that his one of the first things he's going to be doing is readdressing all the House Bill 2 legislation, which had to do with the LGBT groups coming in. These are George Soros-funded groups coming in and disrupting the state with this bathroom legislation to try to, again, just, you know, normalizing the abnormal under the idea of so-called, you know, civil rights and identity politics, etc. Then that, coupled with our lieutenant governor, our attorney general is Josh Stein, who is also, you know, from every indication, a carpet-bagging Jewish supremacist into North Carolina. He's one of these people that moved into the state, went to school here, and, you know, But he is not from North Carolina, but he's going to be our Attorney General. And that does not bode well for anybody who might be coming before the state in any type of hate crime type legislation where they're trying to really redo the Bolshevik method of this idea of hate crimes that they used, the idea of, calling all the Russian Christians racist, et cetera, if they weren't going along with the program. It's a way to get around the freedom of speech clauses in cultures, and with the United States trying to get around that First Amendment of free speech. And so they're trying to rebrand it as hate speech. And so, you don't really want somebody like that in charge of your law enforcement, if you will, and deciding who's going to be charged for, which things the state's going to pursue, which things they're not going to pursue, that kind of thing. The other side of the equation is because there was such a backlash during these elections, the Democrats have lost control of both houses. I believe that's a true statement. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, but it'll be a question of whether or not Roy Cooper will be able to, or Governor-elect Roy Cooper will be able to push any of these agendas through. And that's one of the key things to remember about electing governors and presidents. You're not electing an emperor. You still have the due process, the balances of power. You just have to make sure that those people are doing their jobs in those positions. So that said, I guess we should go ahead and talk about the news along those lines. While we're on that topic, is these are some of the news stories that just hit my radar this week that I think everybody needs to be watching out for. The first one was that the EU basically went after Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook this week about so-called hate speech online and giving them these ultimatums that they have to get rid of all this hate speech. Well, we all know what that means. It's any speech that's not going along with the cultural Marxist program. And remember, the European Union is a non-elected body. You can't get more star chamber justice, more Bolshevik, more communist, more Jewish, Talmudic, Noahide law that really than what you have with the European Union. They're non-elected people. They're acting like these moral high ground politrucks that are currently overseeing the destruction of European history and white genocide. You can't deny that that's what the agenda is. It's for this globalist agenda, and part of that means white genocide. You're not going to have any white nations if these people get their model in place. And so there has been such an awakening in Europe over both the immigration or the invasion, I don't call it immigration, it's an invasion, to destabilize and destroy traditional culture. That's part of the modus operandi, just out of the Saul Alinsky's handbook. The first step in community organizing is community disorganizing. So it's that order out of chaos. You destroy the original system and then you propose the new system, problem, reaction, solution. So this is a method that they're trying to squelch people talking about the realities of what's happening with this asymmetrical war on the European people. And so the European Union is going after Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. What that means, we'll have to wait and find out. Meanwhile, here in the United States, the Senate has passed what they call, and this is just the Senate, still has to go to the House and then has to be signed. But in a very quick measure, there was not much fanfare on this at all. But we found out that the U.S. Senate quickly passed the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act. And this is what I see a very dangerous piece of legislation. That we really need to be watching. The Anti-Semitism Awareness Act of 2016, or AAA, the Scott-Casey bill, requires the Department of Education, DOE, to apply the State Department's, DOS, definition of anti-Semitism in evaluating complaints of discrimination on U.S. campuses. Right. So the takeaway here is that the United States Senate, rather than sticking with the First Amendment of the Constitution, has instead adopted a model from the European Union. So this model, this article goes on to say, in developing their definition and guidance, the DOS adopted language used by the European Union Monitoring Center on Racism and Xenophobia. Okay. And here they quote, anti-Semitism is a certain perception of Jews which may be expressed as hatred towards Jews. Rhetorical and physical manifestations of anti-Semitism are directed towards Jewish or non-Jewish individuals and or their property, toward Jewish community institution and religious institutions. So here, rather than these U.S. senators saying, we took an oath to protect and defend the United States Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic, which includes the First Amendment of free speech, instead, they're adopting this European Union cultural Marxist doctrine. And when you hear this group, how much moral high ground can you take than somebody who calls themselves the European Union Monitoring Center on Racism and Xenophobia? And, of course, the ADL, speaking of our own little Paula Trucks here in the state, the ADL immediately issued a press release welcoming the Senate passage of Anti-Semitism Awareness Act. And, of course, you know, the ADL, it's one of the things you learn about dealing with the Jewish worldview. It's a master-slave worldview. And not only is it defined by its level of intransigence, where there's just no compromise, their way is the only way, but you also get this sense of it's never enough. So here, the ADL, this new guy Greenblatt, does the thank you, but. You know, thank you, we applaud your efforts, but couldn't you have gone a little bit more? Because the ADL is concerned that it really didn't have enough wordage expressing anti-Semitism as being anything to do with anti-Israel sentiment or anti-Zionist beliefs, because here the ADL says, the act addresses a core concern of Jewish and pro-Israel students and parents. When does the expression of anti-Semitism, anti-Israel sentiment, and anti-Zionist beliefs cross the line from First Amendment protected free expression to unlawful discriminatory conduct? So the ADL played a central role in working with U.S. Senators Tim Scott and Rob Casey in crafting and promoting the legislature. So again, we're seeing that these people are in full-on panic mode. They're trying to shut down people that are telling the truth. And one of the things that we're also seeing in this is possible PSYOP, poisoning the well type tactics, where they're trying to discredit the new media of the internet, the individual blogger, the, you know, independent journalist who's not working for their media monopolies. They're trying to discredit us. And so that's why, again, we're urging such caution with the Pizzagate story. The newest update, and of course, this is more synchronicity coming out of North Kakalaki. I'm not sure if you're aware that the latest in the Pizzagate was that an individual, where's his name? Okay, Harry Welch is from North Carolina, who apparently went to the Comet Ping Pong establishment with a rifle. They call it an assault rifle. There's no such thing. That's a propaganda term. A rifle is a rifle. And so the Charlotte Observer here in North Carolina has really been running this story that... Wait a second. Okay, but anyway, I'm going to post this into the chat room and let you read it. This was a pretty good assessment that the Renegade did on just another twist and turns of this, but the guy showed up. It was a media circus, and it looks like this may have been a synthetic operation to, again, try to discredit the Pizzagate story. You know, like we've been saying, the reality of child abduction, child sex slavery, pedophile rings, that's a reality. That is an international problem. The question becomes, is Pizzagate really exposing that, or is Pizzagate poisoning the well, trying to get people to look away from that? And even today, noticed that the Pope came out and was condemning people talking about this topic and say it was slandering innocent people, etc. And then several of the tabloids have picked up this story about making this cabal, the Podesta, Clintons, etc., out to be the victims here. So that's very interesting that they're trying to shift the dialogue in that direction. Definitely keep up with this story. It's not going to go away anytime soon, but when you've got the Pope coming out making a statement and the ADL follows it up with a statement and then all the Jewish magazines come up with a statement, that's starting to look very synthetic, that this is being orchestrated to try to draw attention away from it. So just stay on it, but keep your eyes open. Watch your six, as we say. Also, big news, the Kellogg Foundation boycott. This is taking a very interesting turn, and we definitely need to do a show on Kellogg's. I think there's a full show's worth of material there of just what the W.K. Kellogg Foundation and the company have been up to for a very long time, since the early days of hysteria psycho-treatments of women. They were doing some very torturous things to women, my understanding. I got some very interesting links sent to me earlier this week about some of the treatments at the turn of the 1800s, et cetera, of these, when all these doctors were trying to treat what they called hysteria in women, and which basically was, torture most of the time. But Kellogg's was behind that. Then, just a reminder that Kellogg's was the sponsor of the Monkees TV series. We did the show on that. And just, what a psyop, cultural Marxist project that really was to push the counterculture, etc. So definitely keeping up with that. Just another quick story. Once again, Poland says no to extraditing Roman Polanski, yet another Jewish child rapist who has escaped justice. And again, you know, this type of thing under Talmudic law is not against the law. That's one of the things between most Western civilization law, like the U.S. Constitution and our state laws, et cetera, that strictly prohibit, you know, sex with minors, that, you know, Jewish law, this is part of the culture, just like so many other cultures. It's just part of that culture. And what happens when they start trying to do that in your community with your children, that they possibly have abducted or somebody else abducted and then they bought on the market. So, but anyway, those are just some of the top stories that kind of hit my radar this week. But right now, if I can get him on the line. We're going to bring on Mr. Dennis Fecho. Mr. Dennis Fecho, are you there?
Hello. Welcome, everybody.
Oh, yeah. I got a little gain there. Let's see here. Well, a good morning to you, sir.
Well, thank you. It's really early, to say the least. It's still night for me. I haven't slept yet. So at 4:30 in the morning, I guess it's still night.
I want to check with the chat room and see if they're hearing us okay. Somebody post in the chat room if you're hearing it, or we might want to hang up and try to get a better connection.
You're okay on my side, to be honest with you.
Okay. Well, you sound good to me, but okay. For those, definitely
yeah,
don't
exactly.
want to repeat.
No, the audience is the final judge here.
Yes. Okay.
They can't hear it. It's not a good thing.
Right. Okay. Well, they're giving me the thumbs up in the chat room, so we're going to go with this connection. So welcome again, Mr. Dennis Fecho, back to the Breakfast Club.
Well, thanks. Thanks. Last time I was there was what, July or something like that?
It's been a while, yes. So, and
it was.
Go ahead.
Oh, you know what's coming out here is I'm getting your feedback through my speakers. So I got to turn this down. Oh, you know what? Radio 101. I'm actually connected to you. Okay. I've disconnected from your network. I was listening to the show.
Oh, okay.
So I don't normally do that. You know, it's not my time of day. So I was listening to your show. So now I think that's we're clear now because I've cut out the radio.
Well, great. Well, like I was telling everyone at the beginning of the show, you've been doing this for a very long time. You've had the Inside the Eye live show for how many years now?
No, I really have. It's going to be 2017. So that's going to be 6 years, coming up on 6 years completed. And then, of course, we'll be starting our seventh year.
Wow. When you go to your website, InsideTheEyeLive.com, and look at those previous shows and the guests you've had from all over the world. You have had some of the most informed guests of any show, I think, out there.
Well, thank you. I've tried to do that. Obviously, it's a lot of work to schedule these people and get them to come in. And, you know, like this past summer, we had a really big push to share the situation going on in Europe. So with that, we had Jez Turner. We had the National Socialist Party from Sweden, the guy from Finland. They've said they want to come on. We're just trying to really put the time together. Then Alison Shablos came on, and she's really in big trouble with the Jewish bloc. Apparently, she's just gotten picked off by them. They've been really going after her. Gilad Atzmon was actually my very first guest. I thought that was good. Israel Shamir came on. He came to Jordan, and we had dinner together with his family. So, we've had a nice run, I guess. I guess I can't complain too much, huh?
Oh, yeah. Incredible run. And I was telling everyone how you were the first person to ever give me a platform.
It was easy because you and I shared the almost identical telecommunications experience. So when you told me your story, I knew exactly what you were talking about because I myself had to implement some of the technology that you were talking about. So for me to bring you on, it was just a natural. It was in my field previously, so I understood the story. It wasn't something you had to sell me on because I was already aware of it. So for me, honestly, Frederick, it was really easy to bring you on because I knew exactly what you were talking about when you shared your story originally with me. And obviously it's turned out well for you, I guess, because you've really been moving up the ladder. You know, people are starting to talk about you out there. And that's a good thing. That's why you go into this business, to get the word out, and we need as many voices as possible.
Yeah, this year has been an amazing experience. And, again, I have so many people to thank. We'll get to that later on in the show, but, it was definitely a cooperative effort. And, I really appreciate all the mentoring that you gave me on how to do this kind of show, because...
No,
I was like the musician.
Help everybody grow. Our philosophy, man. We share similar philosophies equally. So we help the good people. You know what I mean? You can't help the bad people, Frederick. I had a Talmudist doctor once, and he was like a grandmaster of the Dong Han sect. Really a trick guy. A trick guy is things who can do things that you just can't believe can be done. And he told me, he says, the good healers never help the ones with the black hearts. You let them die.
Oh, good point. Yes.
Yeah, and he said, this is the problem with the West, is they don't know how to take this into consideration. Because if Western doctors had, we would not have the troubles that we have now with all the issues that, let's say, a Dick Cheney has left us with. Because he's like on his fourth heart transplant.
I was just thinking of people like Dick Cheney.
Yes, exactly. And that's a classic
Kissinger.
Example of a healer that should have just let him die, because there's a reason why his heart is where it's at. And it left his body many, many, many decades ago. So there was a reason for that. And a good healer would not have actually healed him, knowing that it would be better for humanity to let this dark spirit go.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, what I'd like to do is just pop out a couple of topics and let you explain your viewpoint on them for the newbies that are just becoming aware of what we call the Jewish question and what exactly that means. And like me, I'm sure so many people never had a problem with, quote-unquote, the Jews until after 9/11. And like they say, 9/11 changed everything, and I know that had to completely change my worldview when I made the connection between Israeli parties and the 9/11 attacks, and then started exposing things like the Odin-Yenin plan and the Greater Israel agenda. And suddenly all my Jewish friends didn't like me anymore. And I was being attacked viciously everywhere by just trolls coming after me all over the internet, which, you had your share of back during those times. And so suddenly I had to start, reassessing this. It's like, well, maybe I need to start asking the Jewish question. And so, just short answer to you, what is the Jewish question?
It's really interesting because there's two sides to this situation here. And for the newbies out there, and we do like to work with the newbies and keep it down to earth for everybody. If you really think this is all, quote unquote, anti-Semitic, and we're just trying to cast light and single these people out, you need to remember that, look, the idea of the Jewish question has been with Western society for probably 2,000 years. It was so prevalent that as Jewish people started to assimilate into Europe in the 1800s, that they had to deal with this issue because it was obvious that they clash with Western culture. So Karl Marx himself wrote a treatise called On the Jewish Question to deal with it in his way. So there, as far as I'm concerned, I'm on a practical, real pragmatic political level. The Jewish question has already been answered, and Jews have answered it for themselves. And what I mean by that is you can't have a Jewish question in the traditional historical sense unless you have a dominant society that can impose its will upon the Jewish people for whom they are being, for whom the problems are coming from. Because the Jewish question was always about what do we do with these darn Jews who are causing problems in our society. There is no longer a Western dominant culture that can impose itself upon the Jewish community. So Jews have answered that question because the question was always, what do we do with our Jews? And of course, the answer was always, we expel them. And this has been going on for thousands of years. 109 countries, 200 times, expulsion orders coming out of the UK, coming out of Spain, coming out of Austria, coming out of Poland, coming out of Russia. But after all of these expulsion orders, the problem never went away because Jews just shifted from one country to the next country to the next country to the next country. And you just never got rid of the problem. It just shifted. You had a guy coming out of National Socialist Germany said, the Jewish problem for us will not be over until the very last Jew has left German land. And it will not be over for Europe until every single last Jew has left Europe entirely. But the days where the West can impose itself on the Jewish people have been answered now. They can't. The battle's over. Now we are dealing just with the Jewish problem, which is uniquely different from the question. The Jewish question was always about how do we solve things. Right now, people laugh, quite frankly, Frederick, that we're disenfranchised. We have no power. We can't even speak. We're not, you know, even Milo's joking about it. The Breitbarts of the world are joking about it. Stefan Mali, these are all Jewish people supposedly representing the alt-right, but they joke about how, for all intents and purposes, the white population, especially those of us who are somewhat energized, we don't even have a seat at the table yet. So you need to remember that Western history, Western civilization for thousands of years have always had this question, what do we do with our Jews? But again, that, in my opinion, Frederick, Jews answered that question by, quote-unquote, the strategy of emancipation, which was after the French Revolution. And once that process of emancipation started, they were able to infiltrate into Western civilization, bore down, and because of their unique separateness that they practice, their unique hatred for the West, which is very real, they've been able to basically take over through usury and whatever other practices you might want to reference that obviously would need to be true. They've really managed to answer that question, and I think that's something philosophically that we in the West haven't come to grasp with yet.
Well, I guess if I were a newbie, my next question would be, well, what exactly is a Jew? Is it a race? Is it a religion? Is it a cult? Is it a crime syndicate? What defines?
It's all of the above. It really is all of the above, because as they define themselves, they're a religion. As they define themselves, they are a race. When the argument shifts to where it's to their benefit to not be a religion, they will argue, well, it's not a religion, it's secular. And when it turns to be an advantageous to them to say, well, we're not secular, we're a religion, they will change the shifting of the definition to suit themselves to their benefit. So it's really hard for you to win that because even they refuse to be defined. However, we can really break it down to, do they worship Torah? Do they seek after Torah? Do they believe in their chosenness? Are they part of this subculture that is identifiable through the two aeons now? These can all be identified. And so you're looking at basically a people who practice Judaism in whatever form they want. There are Talmudic influences within this at the elite levels. They are separate. They have their own dietary laws, as you mentioned earlier, like with Pizzagate. There are certain things they can do to you and your children that is not a crime to them. Wherever you find them, as far as the fruits never fall far from the tree, you will see a degradation of culture. You will see a degradation of intelligence. You will see a degradation of morality. And this isn't something that we are, quote unquote, anti-Semites talking about this. George Washington talked about this before the Constitutional Convention in like 1771 or something like that. Dostoevsky from Russia, one of the most loved authors of the 1800s. He spoke about this issue. This issue, heck, Sir Francis of Assisi spoke about it. Martin Luther spoken about it. This is something that is part and parcel to their society. These guys, they're looking for countries where, A, they can subjugate the law, create lawlessness. They want to work in realms where people aren't as educated because they're not able to see them for what they are. Their practice and use of usury through the ages has absolutely destroyed so many people's lives. And, of course, that is why they're disliked. So, what is a Jew? It's so hard to pin that down. But, you know, you do have those traits. You've got this separateness, the chosenness, this kind of like, and it's, of course, they will always appear. I mean, and many people have talked about this, that they need us. At the end of the day, they need us. We don't need them. But they appear to us as always friends. But, again, this is something, I don't know, Frederick, to me, it's kind of, there's something like an evil power that's fueling these people subsurface. And it's very deceptive. It's very dishonest. It lacks a lot of ethics. So you'll see the fruits of their labor. You're going to see the decay. You'll see the morality. Their hatred for Christianity is legion. I mean, these guys hate Christianity. I'm not necessarily a Christian, but it has its Osirian parts within it that we all know about from the Lord's Prayer and from the Jesus myth and all kinds of other things, you know. So, we can tolerate the religious philosophies within it if we are pragmatic and rational and not trying to, you know, be too much iron-fisted, because we do need allies out there, and certainly the Christian pragmatists out there would be great allies. You know, they've been fighting, quite frankly, Western civilization and Christianity have been fighting Jews for so long. So, we need allies. So, good question. I'm not sure I answered it, but I hope that was a great answer.
You talked about the Torah. One of the things I think that really happened here in the Southeast United States was during the 1800s, when the Scofield Study Bible was released into the Protestant churches as a study guide, and it was in fact a complete psyop to sell the idea of Zionism and reestablishing Israel to what would become branded as Judeo-Christians, you know, the Christian Zionist movement, if you will. And they would tell the people in the Christian churches that the Jews are just like you. They believe in the Old Testament. And, of course, Protestants had their kings.
He spoke about that also. Washington spoke about that. Exactly. And this is a never-ending theme, Frederick. They just keep doing this from generation to generation to generation, country to country to country.
Right.
And the final step, of course, was, oh, gee, we should assimilate Jews because that's why we have this repression within the Jewish community. And, oh, you know, if we just integrate them and let them assimilate, then the Jewish question is going to be solved. Well, that just led to even more problems. And then they came up with this brilliant idea to solve the Jewish question. Let's create a state just for Jews. And everybody thought that's a wonderful idea because, quite frankly, everybody was tired of dealing with Jews, so they wanted a country to send them to. But as George Washington said and Adolf Hitler said and quite a few others, that even if you gave them a homeland, they would never, ever accept going there because vampires, and this is George Washington talking, okay? Vampires cannot feed off of vampires. They need a host to feed on. And, of course, that is why Jews are never going to go to Israel.
Why do you think that when Theodore Herzl and the World Zionist Conference or Congress came up with their battle flag for Israel in the mid-1800s, they chose those particular symbols of the two blue lines with the hexagram versus the traditional symbol of the menorah, which has long been associated with Judaism, whereas the hexagram is very, very recent in Jewish history. Why do you think they did that?
Because the hexagram is essentially the top, in my opinion, it's the top six parts of the Jewish tree of life.
And
these are Kabbalists. They're Kabbalists, Kabbalists. So what that hexagon is essentially the upper six layers of the Jewish tree of life. And this is part of this Kabbalistic spell, in my opinion.
Right, and when you start talking Kabbalah and Zohar, you start talking about the man perfected and that sort of thing, and that.
Yeah, and because of the Kabbalah, and Kabbalah, as you know, bored into the Scottish Rite through Pike, and it moved Freemasonry from a Christian Kabbalah to a Jewish Kabbalah. To this idea of rebuilding Solomon's Temple, which really got the Knights Templars pretty excited, and it got a lot of these other secret societies excited. And I think a lot of these secret societies obviously never knew that they were always fighting this Jewish God in the past, and they had literally succumbed to the Jewish God and started to serve this God. And so by fusing this Kabbalistic spell to this idea of rebuilding Jerusalem, to bringing back GD so he can sit on his throne, and I've had Knights Templar literally tell me this, they believe it, as insane as that sounds, that no, we are looking forward to the day to rebuilding the temple. So this was a way to, I think, entrap within the secret lodge systems that are out there, and it doesn't have to be Freemasonry, there's lots of different secret lodge systems out there, it was a way to entrap some of the royalty of Europe to, you know, because people are motivated by the higher ideal, Frederick. They want something besides money, besides fame. You know, people are still intrinsically, humans are motivated by this higher ideal. And for a lot of these Western, or a decent enough amount of these Western elites and royalties to seek after this higher ideal, was something that would prove invaluable to the Jewish state.
Right. Well, they often refer to it as the Great Work.
Yeah, they do. They refer it to this Great Work. The Great Work was never about that. The Great Work was always about returning the Word, so that people could raise themselves up. It wasn't about building some freaking temple for Jews, you know, so their GD can come back. I mean, that GD has been trying to destroy the words for time immemorial. So a lot of these secret societies I've always been dismayed with because they just don't get it. They never understood the philosophy.
Okay, in the few minutes we have left, what do you think the international Jewry / Zionist endgame is? And is there a transhuman element in it?
Global domination. They want a world that they can dominate on and impose themselves. And they're very much close to achieving that. They don't have it yet. But they sure have it. I mean, come on, they've got a lot of us on the run. You know, you can't criticize them now. That's part of their Noahidist laws. People are jailed now just for making statements against Jews. You can't put certain things in Facebook without running the risk of that Jewish organization taking you out of business. Google has become very draconian. So you've got a lot of these extrajudicial mass market outlets like Facebook, like Google, like YouTube, that are aiding and abetting this agenda. Well, they are Jewish at the end of the day, so we should expect that. But what they want is total global domination, at least over the Western world. And I've always theorized that's because our Western world understood this idea of the word and how to actually return it, and how we could actually use it to benefit humanity. So by taking us out with our science, our culture, our genuine sense of fairness in treating everybody out there, they can create a world that is just lower, which is what allows them to prosper. They can't prosper in a very healthy Western civilization, and they've never been able to. I mean, they prosper, but then they get smashed. They prosper and they get smashed. And that's this pendulum that we've been dealing with. And we're at the stage now where it's like they've prospered, and what they want to prevent now is getting smashed, because they know they've overplayed their cards. We know, like you said, 9/11 was an overplay. Guys, you know, it wasn't bad enough you took out the Liberty. Come on, 9/11 was a crime that no one can forget because it's fused to a Kabbalistic spell. So it's like, duh, you left it imprinted on everybody's mind. So, you know, you overplayed your hand, and they know it.
All right. Wow. Great information. Mr. Dennis Fecho, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. And please tell everybody again when they can catch your show.
Yeah, every Saturday morning, everybody, just go to InsideTheEyeLive.com. That's the easiest way to get in. It's Revolution Radio at FreedomSlips.com. That's another way to get in. And it's every Saturday morning, 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern to 1 o'clock p.m. And, come on in. You never know what we're going to do from week to week. So usually, though, we have a nice show ready for you.
Right. And right now you're also working on a video project on the ICN codes and also on the Pi and the English language. So can you tell
me? You know, I really am. I've decided to take the original Inside the Eye podcast and put them to videos. It's very time consuming. One video, Frederick, takes about 40 hours to really source it, time it, sequence it, mix it down to where you like it, and publish it. And then I've got access to a very high-level television video production studio that has a whiteboard, green screens. It's basically three studio bays, complete with very high-end cameras, professional lighting. And this is a professional studio setup. And basically they've said, this is yours to use. Just shut the door and use it. It's yours. And so I'm looking to get... Basically, we've done a lot of configuration. We've got the microphones now, because nothing was set up to actually function, Frederick. It wasn't working. So I had to go in and I had to actually bring my mixer and set their microphones properly. So I have the lapel mic and the professional look. And basically, we look forward now to doing a pilot lecture on the ICCN codes, the actual esoteric nature of the word.
Great. And for those of you not familiar with Mr. Fecho's show, he has such a great knowledge of the esoteric aspect of language, especially the English language, that not only do the letters have these numerical values, but also have these phonetic associations. And so I'm really can't wait to watch this series that you're working
on. It's going to be like, I'm going to put together, Frederick, a 45 to 1 hour lecture on the nuances and intricacies and the subtleties of the actual English alphabet at a very high level presentation. It's not necessarily for newbies, but usually, because hey, you know your alphabet, guys, it's at a level, it's what we call that Leshonorian level, where you will be coming in and you will still be interested in it, I'm sure, if you have even the remotest interest in this topic. And from there, obviously, we hope to pique your interest and have you pursuing this this philosophical exploration into the English language that you really can't get in too many places out there.
Definitely. And I think there's going to be a whole nother crop of young people that are going to be interested in this material. Just a whole nother generation out there that are going to be receptive to this material.
Well, I'm sure hopeful. You know, I've dropped it. You know, the younger generation coming up is obviously having to deal with the issues politically. So they're energized. They understand there's a big problem. So that's a good sign, obviously. So I think if we combine the esoteric roots to give people a foundation, a confidence that they have something superior, I think what separates Jewish people from us in many cases is, even though they don't, they have this overriding or under, I don't know if it's an undercurrent or what, but they have this real strong belief that they have something that sets them aside as being superior to everybody else. And that, just that little bit of confidence allows you, maybe, who doesn't understand what really everything is going on, to blink. And the second you blink, you lose in this type of battle. And this type of knowledge, this type of information, gives you a structure upon which you will not blink, because you have something superior to them and you can use it to your advantage. Next time they talk to you, you don't have to blink. You have something far superior to them. In fact, they are lording over our system to prevent you from even getting access to this type of information. So it's really something to give people this, at an elite level, this philosophical backbone to say, no, I'm superior. Because they're not going to assimilate with you. Deal with it. Right now you have a major problem, and we need to get back to the stage where we can talk about the Jewish question and it actually means something.
All right. Again, Mr. Dennis Fecho from Inside the Eye Live, thank you again for coming on the show tonight, and I hope you have a wonderful day and look forward to your show on Saturday.
And I hope I have a wonderful sleep now.
All right.
Good night, everybody. Thanks.
Good night.
For
thank you. All right. Always a pleasure to have Mr. Fecho on the show. And we're going to try to bring in our second hour guest. And again, you're listening to Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club here at BlackbirdNineTradingPost.org. If you'd like to join us, come out to BlackbirdNineTradingPost.org. And in the upper left-hand corner, you'll see three parallel bars. That's the menu. Go into the podcast lounge, or you can go straight into the Trading Post lounge at bb9tradingpost.chitango.com. And I believe we have Clint Richardson on the phone now with us.
Greetings.
Greetings. Hold on just a second. I'm going to try to bring in Mr. Patrick Jordan. Make sure I've got the number right here. And let's see here. And we want to. version. Try it this way. Bear with me just a second. I was so happy we finally got the Skype functionality 70% working again. I went from being totally deleted by Skype to recovering my account to getting dial out functionality. We're still having a bit of a problem with the dial in functionality, but we're working on it.
They'll probably make you an offer you can't refuse here pretty soon, where they say, you know, you wouldn't have these problems if you would just give us your biometric identification, and then we can guarantee you are you, and da 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 da.
Oh, that's so true. Every time I went to try to get something fixed, they were always trying to give me an upgrade for a few more shekels.
Exactly.
Are you still there? Did I drop? Okay. Let's do it this way. I think I may have dropped him.
Hello.
Hello. Is this Mr. Patrick Jordan?
This is.
All right. See if we can now bring in Mr. Clint Richardson that we just dropped. Are you there, sir? Is Mr. Clint Richardson there?
Greetings again.
Ah, good. Sorry we dropped you. I think we have both. Roll call.
Patrick?
Check test. Yes. Are we on air?
We are on air. Okay. We are live at Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club. I'd like to welcome to the show Clint Richardson and Mr. Patrick Jordan. As we talked about earlier in the show, Clint Richardson came on last year. He was one of our early Pathfinders coming in for the Big Nine at Nine, and that was a very informative show. You need to go out to the archives and watch that. And Mr. Patrick Jordan, new to the show, so welcome to the Trading Post. Welcome to the Breakfast Club. And tonight, our topic is, we're continuing on to the Jewish question. So I'd like for you to start with you, Clint Richardson, and just introduce yourself a little bit to the newbies, and then in a short answer, just give, you know, what is the Jewish question, and then we'll go to you afterwards, Mr. Jordan.
Very nice. My websites are, instead of wasting time about myself, because we don't have much of it, I'll just say you can go to thecorporationnation.com and see my documentaries. You can go to realityblogger.wordpress.com to see my blog. And I'm releasing a book that will be free for download and hopefully be in print here in January of this year, and that is strawmanstory.info. Other than that, I've just been researching and doing this for a very long time, as has my compatriot here, Patrick. We, especially in the vaccine realm, and hopefully soon me and Patrick are going to get together and make a definitive, over-the-top, absolute destructive vaccine documentary. If we can ever get around to it, we can get some funding to perhaps do it right. Maybe we can enter it into some film festivals that will deny us. But, you know, we'll see. I wanted to start today instead of – I want to keep this as neutral as possible. I don't want to fall into the aspect of, you know, the hate and the name calling, and I really want to understand and get across where this word actually came from, the Jew, the word the Jew, because you find out when you do a little bit of research that this word didn't really exist before, say, the 18th century, and that it is a play on words, and it is one of those words, kind of like the word God, that is used in the Bible to replace different other words. For instance, the word God in the Bible is used specifically to replace the words Jehovah, the words Elohim, which is the plural for gods, as in the old Babylonian gods, the word archon, the word magistrate, the word mostly men who are playing the gods. A god is defined as a magistrate, which can be a king, a president, a mayor, and basically a governor and everything in between. So the word god is kind of like the word Jew in the new versions of the Bible. And if we're going to talk about the word Jew, we absolutely have to talk about the Bible, of course, because this is sort of the, you know, we're talking about the new law or the New Testament, which is the quote-unquote Christian Testament versus the law of God or the law of Christ versus the old law, which is the law of the Elohim or the gods, which is what the quote-unquote Jews were following, you know, all that history that we talk about before the exile, Babylonian exile and all that stuff. So we really need to, I think, focus on the history of the word, how it's been misrepresented and misused. And then, of course, I think we should also talk about the notion of genealogy because, boy, when I spent years going through genealogy, trying to figure out how things work, and when I saw that everything was connected, every, you know, all the CEOs of corporations, all the presidents, all the vice presidents, all the, you know, all the actors, especially are all related by blood. I started seeing that all the actors in Hollywood had changed their names from Jewish names to more Americanized names. And yet they're all related to the kings of England and the presidents and the, you know, it's all one big happy family, in other words. And so this is where I would refer to Patrick because honestly, the notion, it's really a notion of who is Jew and who is not. In other words, the question comes down to you individually and which law you are following. Are you following the old law? Are you following the law of the Jew? Have you been Judaized? Or are you following the new law, which is the law of Christ? Well, I can guarantee that everybody in America has been Judaized, and therefore the word pagan, the word Gentile, the word goyim, and the word nation, to be born in the nation, is basically the same term. So I'm here to tell you that it's not a question of you know, did the Jews do this? The concept of the Jew, which we'll talk about, is the opposing force of the goyim. So you're either going to be a goyim, a slave to the Jew and its law, or you are going to be a true follower of the what they call the word or law of God, which is the Christian notion of the law. And what's important about that is that the Bible is the foundation of the common law in England and America and all the what they call Christian nations. The reason they call them Christian nations, it's because the Bible is the foundation of law. You either follow that foundational principles and maxims of law that are based in Scripture, or you fall into the Jewish law or the old law. So you're either part of the new law, or you're part of the old law, which is the Jewish or Mosaic, if you will, written law. The unwritten law or the written law. And so, basically, I mean, I'm here to tell you that this is all on you. Whoever's listening right now, it's all on you personally. You are the problem. You are participating in their system. You are participating in their money. You are participating in their persona, their flattering titles, their universities, all the things that are set up in their system to control you. You are participating in that. And the guess what? The new law says don't do any of those things. Take no oaths, have no other gods, have no person, have no flattering title, have none of the things that you do every day. Use no money, don't participate in mammon. You can only have, you know, the god of nature, the god of mammon, that's your choice. Well, mammon is a word that means valuation. And see, what you've done is you've valued everything in money, not in the priceless nature that is quote unquote God, which is all that is in self-existence, right? All of nature. But no, instead you're in the money system. Well, whose system is the money system? Do you think you think there's anything in the New Testament that says, yeah, money's okay. Go ahead and use it. You think there's anything in the system that says anything that you're doing is okay? No. This is the problem. The problem is not that there are Jews. Jews are just fulfilling their what we call Jews are just fulfilling their functionality. They're bankers, they're lawyers, they're politicians, they're kings, they're queens, okay. They're actors, they're CEOs. They're just doing all of that because they've got your full attention, because you are participating in their system. Right. You're to blame, no one else. So I'll pass it on.
All right. Mr. Patrick Jordan, same thing. Please introduce yourself to the audience and your kind of just a little bit of your background. And again, you know, what do you think of when you hear the Jewish question? Not the Jewish problem, but just the Jewish question.
Sure. So my name is Pat Jordan, and I bill myself as just a farm boy from Illinois that was confronted with my mother's kidney disease and what I call her murder in healthcare. And to get to the bottom of it, it led me straight to vaccines. They are the cause of nearly all modern diseases today. And when you enter into medicine, you can't get there without falling headlong into politics. When you get into politics, you cannot go anywhere without falling headlong into religion, because that was the basis of control. Control always came from religion. So religion and politics, for me, is a continuum. And because, and we could do an entire show on this, because of that interrelationship, because of that continuum, then medicine then becomes the triumvirate. So you can't enter any point in that triangle without interfacing with the other points. And that became my life. I've been doing this straight since 2008. I've got 15 books out there, and you can find my work. And like Clint says, just to keep it brief, you can find my work at vaccinefraud.com. And part of what I had to examine was, in this political control structure, there was a fiction called the Jews that were supposedly the rulers of the world. And so when you ask, you know, talk about the Jewish question, well, that can't be answered. And the reason is this, because there is no such thing as a Jew. It is a fiction, but well beyond that, and well beyond what Clint said as the word Jew originating around the 1700s, is around the 1600s, the letter J became introduced into phonetics, into the lexicon. So therefore, it is a relatively new invention. It is a spelling, and when you look at the occult, the black magics, to cast a spell, you actually use words, and so people have fallen under the spell of the Jew without ever understanding the actual science, because this is where I break it down. Unless we can talk about this scientifically, then it's all just mental masturbation. So the science of cymatics is when people either vocalize or they use speakers on a surface, and they have some kind of granular material on there, and a pattern actually arises based on the frequency that is being projected. And you can actually use standing waves of sound to levitate things. You know, all this stuff is verifiable. Go look up audio levitation, look up cymatics, and you will find that in the black magics, in the ancient Egyptian practice, that they claim, that the priests claim, that the pronunciation of the words were more important than any other part of the ritual. And so I'm not being mean to you, Frederick, or the listeners, but if you're talking about the Jews, you're a complete idiot. Because it means you have no idea of history, you have no idea of language, you have no idea of etymology, and you have no idea of science. Because this is what the magicians were trying to hide. This is the spell work, that if you mispronounce it, then let's try this. Call me Pat Tunk Jordass. Go ahead and, you know, just call it out loud. Hey, Pat Tunk.
Hey, Pat Tunk.
Goddamn Jordache.
And see, I'm not going to answer you. Just like when, you know, really devout Christians pray to Jesus with a J, and their prayers are not answered. Why? Because even Jesus didn't exist. Because it's a J. Because it's a transliteration of Yahushua. Well, good grief, that's not even close to Jesus. So if you're trying to evoke or invoke a demon or a god, because you must call a demon by its, like, secret name in order to bring it forth and then command it. If you don't have the name, if you don't have the shape, if you don't have the sound, you have nothing. And the spell casting here, you know, let's talk about the Jew. Well, there is no such thing because the word is a fiction. It's a recent invention. And I'm not going to say, because it's practical. People have been called anti-Semitic when it's actually the clan of Shem. So you would have to be an anti-Shemite. They've been called anti-Semitic and anti-Jewish and either put in prison or killed for it. So there is a reality component to it. But the black magic's curse is that there is no such thing as a Jew. So we actually have to go deep and define, well, then what is this thing that is called a Jew? And we can explore that, you know, through the rest of the show.
Well, let me tell you the difference here between the old law. A simple way to understand the old law, the Jewish law, the Mosaic law, the law of the gods versus the law of basically nature, which is the one true God. You know, all these words are just words. And that's very important. Like Patrick said, they're just spellings. They're spells. And they either turn you on or turn you off. And if they turn you off, then you're missing out on things because of the words. People say Jesus Christ, and they want to, you know, puke. When in truth, the word Jesus Christ, the definition or the translation of Jesus Christ is actually, quote, Jehovah is salvation. When you describe Jehovah, Jehovah means that all that is truth, all that is self-existence, all that is nature, nothing that is man-made. No art, no technology, no fiction, just pure reality. All that is with everything that man hasn't touched, essentially. That is essentially the definition of the highest form of God, and that's where the law of nature comes from. When we say the law of nature, we really mean the law of source, or the glue that holds the universe together, that sort of thing. The difference between the old law and the new law, you know, is very simple. In the old law, you had genealogy, you had the tribe of Shem, Patrick was saying. However, that's figurative. Shem actually means name, so it's actually the tribe of the name. Well, how do you keep a tribe of the name? You track your bloodline, your genealogy. Okay, that's the old law. The new law says pay no attention to Jewish customs and fabled genealogies. Well, would you say we're in the new law or the old law if all of our presidents are direct descendants of the kings of England, and of course you have the kings of England that are all direct descendants of themselves, and then all the lesser countries, obviously we're still in the old law. We're still under that Jewish law, if you will. So what does the New Testament say? The New Testament says, there is neither Jew nor Greek. There is neither slave nor free man. There is neither male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. Now, again, that means Jehovah is salvation, nature. What you really are, truly are, I am that I am, etc. And if ye be Christ's, each and every one of you be Christ. In other words, act according to the law that is set out. The common law is the Bible. If you act according to the New Testament law, then you're immune from the old law. You're immune from the old gods and all of this crap that we're talking about with the Jews. And if you be Christ, then you are Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise. Well, what is that referring to? Well, there's another quote that I don't think I have in front of me, but it speaks to what the promise is. And the confusion in the Old Testament, you say, well, the seed of Abraham was the tribe of this or the tribe of that. It was a bloodline. It was a, you know, no, that's not what the meaning of the words in the Bible are. In the Bible, it's saying that the seed are as everyone who is following in the new law, the New Testament, right? So I never thought that I would actually be someone who got into the Bible, but everything led me. Every dead end when it came to studying the legal law always led to the Bible. And so I figured I'd better pick it up. And so after 3 years or so here of just constant study and comparing the legal law versus the spiritual law, the new law, legal law being part of the old law, the written law, in other words, you start to figure out that the written law is dead. It causes us to be dead, or i.e. in person. It causes us to follow a strict written law where we have to make no choice. We know the law. There's no moral choice. There's no moral compass. We know the law. We do it. We're acting as goyim, as dead persons, basically, dead spiritually dead men. And the New Testament, the new law, adds that spirituality, that sort of glue that fills in all the cracks so that you cannot break. That's why they say it's the fulfillment of the old law, which is perfect except for it's dead. It has no spirituality, has no choice. And so the true free man out there would be a man who is always making a choice and is always following that new law. Now, we don't have time, of course, to go into that. That would take hours and hours and hours to present what that actually means. I can only ask you to trust me when I say that after so many years of study and my book covers this in triplicate, that our problem is that we are following the Jewish law. We are goyim of the nation. That is our problem. We're not following the new law, which is technically the anti-Jewish law or the anti... again, Jewish is a very, very, very bad term. The other thing that I'll leave the Yahudi to Patrick because he loves to slam, you know, that. But the Bible actually refers to when the word Jew was placed in the new translation starting in the 18th century. Again, Jew cannot be found in the 1611 or the earlier original King James in the Old English. It cannot be found in the newer one. It's only starts in the later publications. Now, what we find is this word refers to either Yahudi or this other word. Again, when they use a word in translation, it can mean several different words. In fact, the word in Strong's Concordance for Jew, it actually goes to this word Iudios, Iudaios. It's used for Jew, or Jew is used for it. It's the translation is Jew, okay, or Judea one time, or Jewish two times, but 193 times for the word Jew. And I want to read you from Thayer's Greek Lexicon so that we actually get a true source, not some radio shock jock, not some, you know, researcher into Hitler. No, this is actually from Thayer's Greek Lexicon, the go-to, you know, type of thing where you go to understand what these words actually mean. Why was this word iudios, I'm sorry, I'm saying it wrong, replaced with the word Jew? And here's what it means. Those who live in foreign lands among the Gentiles, it's used of converts from Judaism or Jewish Christians. It is restricting ourselves to the employment of these three words in the New Testament. I'm reading from the lexicon now. Restricting ourselves to the employment of these three words in the New Testament, we may say that the first is predominantly noted language, in the second, nationality, and in the third, theocratic privileges and glorious vocation. The Apostle John, inasmuch agreeably to the state of things in his day, he looked upon the Jews, which is this word, again, I'm not pronouncing right, as a body of men hostile to Christianity. In other words, a body of the old lawmen hating the new law because it ruins all of their privileges, all of their bloodline privileges, their fabled genealogy, with whom he had come to see that both he and all true Christians had nothing in common as respects religious matters. Even in his record of the life of Jesus, not only himself makes a distinction between the Jews and Jesus, but ascribes to Jesus and his apostles language in which they distinguish themselves from the Jews, as though the latter sprang from an alien race. Those who not only at Jerusalem, but also in Galilee, opposed his divine master and his master's cause, especially the rulers, priests, members of the Sanhedrin, the Pharisees. He did not hesitate to style this word, Iudaeus, since the hatred of these leaders exhibits the hatred of the whole nation towards Jesus. So what we're talking about, according to Jewish writers, like Shlomo Sand, who wrote The Invention of the Jewish People, we actually have to go deep into the modern history to understand why it is that, again, a whole nation that hates Christianity, well, that's Israel. why the new Israel, this Israel that has nothing to do with the original Israel, which didn't mean a land, it meant a people who were believers. Okay, you had the Israelites, which were believers in God, not a land, not a city, not a nation, right, in that term. And then now you have the Israeli nation, which is a legal fiction, has nothing to do with being a believer in that way. In fact, 76% of Jews claim to be atheists. So it's an atheistic religion, even though that sounds like an oxymoron. The truth of the matter, and again, this goes back to the Bible being law, right? You're either under the old law or the new law. You don't really have a choice. I'm sorry to tell you. The Talmud is listed in the legal dictionaries. The Talmud is called the civil law of the Jews, quote unquote. Okay. Which of course we're starting to get an idea of what that actually means. The Talmud is the civil law of Jews. Well, the Bible is our, the New Testament is our, civil and moral law. The difference between us and them is that they follow their law. You know, why do they control us? Why do these people in places of high power, corporations and et cetera, why do they have so much power? Because they have a Talmud and they follow it. They follow their law. Whereas we have the Bible sitting there being completely unused. In fact, 9.9 out of 10 people have no idea the Bible is even our common law. Right. They have been trained systematically by the Jewish infiltrated schools, and I'm using that modern word Jew again. We've been trained to hate the Bible. We've been trained to hate religion, and therefore the Bible, when religion has nothing to do with the Bible. Understand that the Bible is law, not religion. The Bible is law. The Bible is not religion. Religion, including Freemasonry, comes along and says, well, we're going to take the Talmud, the Bible, and the Quran, and we're going to justify our existence as a religion or non-religion according to that book. But the book has nothing to do with Freemasonry. It has nothing to do with religion. It's the law. So what's our problem? We're following the old law. We're tricked in every capacity to follow the old law, which we call the Mosaic, i.e. Jewish law. Now, that is the word that is used and that stems etymologically from the word Yahudi. So I'll pass that over to Patrick.
Yes. Okay, and Frederick, you know, if you want to say anything, go ahead.
I guess I just, you know, trying to take in what you're saying and the framework of my notes. And so this fiction of a Jew, okay, we're going to define this relatively new word that's a fiction. But, Patrick, how do you break down that fiction? Is it defined by a race, a religion, a cult, a crime syndicate? How do you differentiate between these groups of genetically different people, the Ashkenazi, the Sephardic, and the Ethiopian, quote-unquote, Jews? So,
excellent. Absolutely excellent. And you don't. I'm going to give a soundbite, which I rarely do because I'm trying to learn how to memeify everything. There is only us and them. They are defined as individuals who do evil. And pay close attention to what I just said, individuals that do evil, because Clint and I had a conversation before the show, and he, let's see, where did I put the quote? He said, a Jew can't exist by itself, because in legal parlance, there are things that are called self-evident. They stand alone. Anybody can look at it and see what it is without having it described, without any proof, without any outside authority. But when you align yourself with a fiction, I'm a Jew, then you've just hived yourself, you know, like a beehive. You have become a stinging agent of death. And the problem is, and this is going to piss off every white supremacist on the planet, the problem is that a Jew then is somebody that does evil, and it can be a quote-unquote white person. It can be an Aryan. And why is that? Because when Clint said to me on air, we did a bunch of shows on RBN, and he kept saying, we, and I got so pissed off. I said, what's all this we stuff, white man? You know, I'm not participating in all this evil. He goes, you ever buy a cup of coffee at Starbucks? You are feeding their system, you are paying them money, and you are giving them taxes. And there is an awesome quote that I don't have up right now in Deuteronomy, which has to do, when you come to a city, you bid it peace. That's the shalom. We bid you peace. And if they bid you peace back, then you enter, and you subjugate them, and they will pay you tribute forever. And tribute means taxes. So our taxes is what they're funding the most powerful militaries on the planet with, and they're creating police that are equivalent to military, and they're creating police that pays their little grannies for like speeding infractions. Okay, so when Clint said we, and I said I ain't part of that, those tributes that are going to the occupiers, and who are these occupiers? See, this is the problem. This is the fracture in the mind that's going to happen. If there is a bloodline, yes, they are a clear and present danger, and they must be dealt with. But then what do you do with, and here's what's going to piss off the Aryans and the white supremacists again, the Nazi collaborators, because everybody goes, oh, my God, Hitler wasn't a Jew. Well, we haven't even defined what a Jew is. So how do you know he wasn't a Jew if you haven't defined the word? Okay, so Hitler wasn't a Jew, and the Jews say that he was, you know, so now you got a dialectic. But the problem is, Nazi collaborators is a meme. It's something people can wrap their minds around, of people that are not necessarily German, but they work with the Germans, and then they take over, as Hitler's plan was, Arning Schicklgruber. See, again, you know, it's a Babylonian name change. He wasn't really Adolf Hitler. Arnie Schicklgruber, he wanted to take over the world, and whether that was for nefarious or, you know, altruistic purposes, let's just leave that debate aside. There were people, and I'm using the phrase, that collaborated with him. And so if we divorce ourselves now of the topic of Hitler and just go to, quote-unquote, the problem of the Jews or the question of the Jews, who's collaborating with them? Well, everybody. And this is what Clint is trying to say. In the Bible, and which is a book I absolutely despise, I think it's the most foul thing on the planet, and I understand Clint's take on it. It's like having a the enemy's map of a minefield, And if you can decipher the scribblings and you can tell where the mines are, then you might be able to navigate your way clear of the mines that they laid for us. But when I look at the Bible, and I can see it from his perspective, when I look at the Bible, I just see, my God, we're surrounded by a bunch of psychopaths that laid mines everywhere. Okay? So the quote in the Bible is, come out from her, O my people, meaning the whore Babylon. And that's what Clint is saying, is we must remove ourselves from the structure, because even white people are collaborators, collaboration with the quote-unquote Jew that still has not been defined, and I will do that. I'll tell you what a Jew is. I'll bring you all the way back to tell you what a Jew is. Anybody that collaborates with them is still doing evil. And see, that was my point of delineation. What is there? There's only us and them, and they do evil. And so does it matter if they're a Jew? Because white people have harmed me. Black people have harmed me. Asian people have harmed me. Red people have harmed me. Jews have, they hate me genetically. I mean, they can literally, they can smell you from 12 feet away. You enter a room, and when I'm in a room with quote-unquote people of Hebraic extraction, the entire atmosphere changes, and the hate that is directed towards me is like, it's phenomenal. It's almost supernatural, okay? So there is a genetic component to it. Let's look at that genetic component. Now, there are people on the internet that absolutely flood that media with, okay, well, the Jews, okay, the real Jews, they're the Edomites. They're from Esau, not from Jacob. And Jacob wasn't Jacob. There's a J. It was Jacob, who changed his name. There again, Babylonian name changed to Israel. Israel. Okay, so they're changing names. So Jacob became Israel, his twin brother. Okay, so if we're talking genetics, if a race of people were evil, do you really think a twin brother is going to have any delineation of not evil in those genes? Because we're going to trace this back through the genome. So there's these false delineations between Edomites and Esau and Jacob. But who did they come from? They came from Abraham. What did Abraham come from? Heber. Heber created the Hebrews from the Shemitic line of Noah. But let's just take a look first at what Abraham created. He had three wives. The princess, and get that right, Princess Hagar from Egypt gave him Ishmael, that became what people call the Arabs, but are actually the accepted Arabs. And then his second wife, Sarai, who became Sarah. They changed their names. He went from Abram to Abraham. They changed their names. She gave him Yitzhak, and that is your Judaic, your Yehudi line. And then after Sarah died, he got lonely. He got another wife called Keturah, and she gave him another line of people nobody even talk about. And so when we trace these back, each one of those wives came from Hagar came from Ham, Sarai came from Shem, and Keturah came from Japheth. Now, though, and Japheth, that's the way it's rendered in English Bibles. Japheth was that third tribe of Noah that nobody talks about. Let's talk about it because it's important. Japheth gave rise to the Aryans, spelled A-Y-R-A-N or A-R-I-A-N. It's the Aryans. Now, these people actually claim themselves in the archaeological records as being whites. Oh, my God. Okay, so the white people were breeding with Abraham. So are they Jews or are they white? But well, let's take this back farther. Let's take it back to Shem. Let's take it back to Ham and Japheth. They were brothers. So what we're looking at is internecine war between three brothers, Ham, Shem, and Japheth, that all came from who? Noah. And what did they do? They came down from on high, which is like a rendering of the Elohim, the shining ones that came down from on high, after some cataclysm, to rape, pillage, and plunder, and completely murder anybody in their way to take over the planet. And so we are looking at traceable gene lines of three different brothers, and everyone is saying, you're a Jew, no, you're a Jew, oh, you're an Arab, and we got to get rid of you. But the Arabs, when I did a deconstruction, and I sent you that paper, what is it called? I'll find it really quick, and anybody can ask for it. Place is not race. See, Arab became a word that meant not only a race of people, but the place itself. And the Arabs were Shemite and Hamites mixing.
Right.
And so for races that would literally breed with their cousins and their sisters, they were crossbreeding. And within the Arab construct were also Negroids interbreeding. And so, you know, you got your white supremacists, you got your Aryans, you got your Jews that, you know, don't even want to mix with anybody. And all of a sudden you look at their family tree, and my God, it looks like a Jackson Pollock painting.
So, Patrick, this is where Patrick and I will go in different directions, because, see, to me, this just sounds like any other tale of fiction that I would hear about Tiamat and, you know, Marduk or any of the other gods and histories. I mean, this is all fiction to me. And that's the point. That's why I say the New Testament says there is no Jew. There's no Greek. There's no black. There's no slave man. There's no male or female. I mean, to say there's neither male or female, that's huge. That's talking about everyone out there. There's no male or female. You are one in, again, Christ Jesus, which means it's basically nature worship. If you're worshiping nature as God, then you're literally a Christian. And if that means you're ignoring all these artificial tales, all these fabled genealogies. See, the difference between what Patrick is saying and what I've discovered is that, yes, you have the tribe, but tribe doesn't mean tribe in the Bible. It means something else, just like daughter means people of a city. All these words have completely different meanings than the dog Latin English that we know, this language of illiteracy we've been taught, so that we never get the spiritual notion of the Bible, the figurative notion. And so I'm here to tell you that there are no tribes. That's all crap. That's what the New Testament is trying to tell you. You're either following the law or you're not. You're the seed if you follow the law, which is basically Christ is the example of the law, or you're not, right? So the word Shem means name. Okay, so who's controlling us? The tribe of the name. Who are Ham and who are Japhet? Well, you could go down the road and route of genealogy or race or bloodline or whatever, or you can look and see what those words actually mean in the Bible. Japhet. I'll start with Ham. Ham means red or angry. Well, that describes the way it's worded and described. That describes the Arab religions, the people who are, for all intents and purposes, compared to us, you would say uncivilized. You would say whatever you want to say. But they're angry. I mean, those people. I give them credit because they'll actually die for what they believe in, whereas we're sitting here all Judaist, you know, Judaized, and we're allowing them to steal our children, to inject us with all kinds of crap. And that's what Japhet actually means. Japhet means gullible. That's what the tribe of Japhet, and that's what all of us are out here. We're going, oh man, them stupid Jews, they're always harming us. Oh man, everything's the Jews' fault. Oh man, oh, it's always someone else's fault but mine. Oh man. But the whole time, it's just us being the tribe of Japhet, which is this people that is a gullible people. The way that the Jew describes the white Aryan race is as a good people, but completely gullible. You want to really understand what your disposition is, then you need to start reading some Jewish writing so that you get an idea of how they view us. For instance, you goyim or you Gentile is a great work, and it explains that they give us the rules. They teach us how to play Monopoly. They keep us on the Monopoly board and their little avatars. That meanwhile, they're the banker. They're controlling the system. They don't play by the rules. They're immune from the rules. You know, I can beat any chess master. Put a chess master in front of me and I will beat him in one move because I don't follow the rules. I'm a Jew. I make the law. I don't follow it. Therefore, my queen can move any time. I got you in checkmate without you even moving because I'm a Jew. I don't follow your law. I give you your law and you follow it. I give you sport and every aspect of your culture is based on the rules of sport. You hunt in sport. You kill with sport. You do everything in sport. Now, this is straight out of the Jew's mouth. This is straight out of a book called Ugoyim. It's a criticism of us and how gullible and how absolutely whiny we are at the fact that these people have got all these systems of word magic and trickery and money and everything else to completely fool us and to make us into the tribe of Yafet, who is controlled by the tribe of the name, and who, of course, will be pitted against the tribe of Ham, the angry. This is why you're seeing a Muslim versus a Christian war, because the Jew, quote-unquote, this word that we don't quite understand, is causing all of that to happen, because they're making the rules. They're forcing us together. These are the types of concepts. You know why they call the, you know why they say, you know, the Jews are circumcised? Well, Christians are supposed to be circumcised too. You know that? The problem is you don't know what the word circumcised means because you're stuck in dog Latin. You're stuck in a language of complete illiteracy made by those people who give you the law written in a language of illiteracy. Meanwhile, they're still using the Latin grammatical terms, which are completely opposite than what you intend to say with your dog Latin language that you learn in public school with a public education, so you're public-minded. You're not private like them, you see. So what does circumcision actually mean? Do you really think that circumcision means cutting a little piece off your dick when you're a baby or having some rabbi chew it off? No, that's not what it means. It means to separate yourself from these other people. Why are Christians circumcised? Why are Jews circumcised? Because they're international. They're not national. Remember, nation means to be a goyim. They're internet. They are outside of this system of law that they create. And that is why they've got us all playing all these sports. Whether it's our employment, we follow the rules. We follow the rules of chess. We follow the rules of Monopoly. We follow the rules of money. We follow the rules of debt, even though it's completely outrageous. Right? We follow the rules of usury, even though our new law says usury is absolutely out of the question. We don't do charity. We don't act in love towards one another. We don't respect each other. We respect each other's persons, not each other. I mean, we are completely breaking the law. And that is why we are under the tribe of the name, the fabled genealogy that is the quote-unquote Jew.
And Clint, you said it because you used the word we. You and I are not too divergent in our directions. I want to take people to my website, to one of my web pages that's on the left-hand tab. It's called Moving Forward. Check out that webpage, because my synthesis of this is, yeah, we can go through Ham, Shem, and Yafet and take it back to Noah and take it maybe all the way back to Hadam, which is the rendering of Adam. What we're looking at is a gene line of people that are susceptible to what I have identified as most probably a viral inclusion in the genetic makeup of a certain gene line of people that are highly susceptible to being induced to doing evil. And that's all we're looking at. When you say we, well, when you act as a body, you're no different than being a locust that is like agitated into becoming a swarm. If it was only just Frederick or only just Patrick or only just Clint acting on our own, we could negotiate between each other in an amiable fashion and live our lives with no contention whatsoever. But when you say, I am of the Japhethites, and we are the whites, we are the Aryans, we are the super race, and then the Jews say, oh, no, actually, you know, you're under our thumb, then you've got this dialectic, you've got the back and forth, because you're claiming to be something, a fiction, outside of yourself, and using the power of the hive. And where does that hive derive from? I believe, I hate that word, I firmly hold to that it is a viral, and I'm talking microbial. I'm not talking memes, mind viruses, or computer viruses. I hold to the notion that it is a viral infection, and that these races, in quotes, that are called the Jews, that actually include what is also called, in quotes, white people, are susceptible to the infection that causes evil. And so I, like Clint, say, get rid of these genealogies. Don't give a shit. You're either doing evil or you're not, which means you're either susceptible to a literal infection or not.
Okay.
So that's a subject that goes an entirely different direction, and it's actually provable that 80% of nature is parasitic, and that many life forms subsist by taking over their hosts and causing them to do the most horrible things against their own self-interest. That's a whole other subject. Right. It's a similar subject, but it's the thing. So let me just end this by saying let me take a guess at who's listening. I'll bet you that who's listening right now are people like me who are fooled into participating in things like End the Fed. End the Fed, having no idea what the hell that even means. And at the same time, maybe you held up signs outside the Federal Reserve, maybe whatever. And at the same time, you had Federal Reserve notes in your pocket. You had credit cards, you had debit cards, and you go across the street and you spend money on a frickin' Coca-Cola, a Jewish-owned company, and you use the Federal Reserve note, go back, pick up your sign, drink your Starbucks coffee, which is the main contributor to Israel, and you pick it, right? You have no idea what you're actually participating in or what you want to end, and you have no replacement to end it, so it's a moot point anyway, so, which, you know, if it ended, it would cause chaos. So this is the kind of stuff that we're driven to by the shock jocks out there, your Alex Jones and those Zionists. We didn't even get into the reason for all this, which is Zionism, which goes back to the Kingdom of Jerusalem, which is the crown kingdom. Why they needed to invent the Jewish people to pretend there was an actual Jewish people attached to that land, so that they could justify so that the crown could go in and justify taking it, quote, and taking it back for a people that never existed in the first place. But that's another story.
Mr. Patrick Jordan, rebuttal.
No rebuttal. I'm laughing my butt off because the Federal Reserve arose from the ancient Babylonian and Carthaginian temple worship systems, and it was all based on sacred prostitution. Every woman within the geographical area, regardless of status or age, was required to act as a temple prostitute for money. It was a donation to the church, so to speak, for services rendered, so church services, was sacred prostitution, and because the priests were hauling in so much money, they became the bank. So the Federal Reserve is called the temple.
The temple, baby.
Listen, all this stuff is out there, able to be discovered, and it's blatant, like a neon sign, once you get the inroads to it. And so what Clint and I are saying, we are on the same page. Lose the name. Lose the hive association. Because I've got to tell you something.
Lose respect for the name.
So what it is in 2010, I think, I was doing shows with Rebecca Carley on RBN, and a woman that identified herself as an Ashkenazi Jew told us about chimeras and mosaics. She didn't have to, okay? She was, quote-unquote, a Jew, which is, quote-unquote, the enemy. And she gave us the two words that actually set me on the course to where we are right now of understanding evil and how to get rid of it. So was she a bad Jew? Was she a good Jew? Or was she just an individual doing good? Because when I say Ashkenazi, everybody's going to think Howard Stern, big old hook nose, ugly looking dude, bad attitude, or Margaret Hamilton playing the Wicked Witch from the West on Wizard of Oz. And everybody identifies with, that's a Jew. Those are the bastards that are holding us down. Well, what if I said Scarlett Johansson? She's Ashkenazi Jew. So what do you do with that? Who is a Jew? Who cares? You're either doing evil or not.
You're following their law or you're not. It's that simple.
That's the only question. There is no Jewish question.
Very good. On that note... Oh, I wish we could keep going. This has been so fascinating. Really appreciate you coming on the show. I can't believe we're already out of time. Clint Richardson and Mr. Patrick Jordan, thank you so much for coming on the Breakfast Club. You'll come back soon. And lots of good information. We'll have to have you back, because I'm sure a lot of people are going to want to ask questions. I've seen all these questions roll by in the chat room. But anyways, we'll have to have you back on.
Oh, I'm sure you'll get all kinds of shit for this one.
Oh, yes. So, but for the newbies, really appreciate you hanging in there, because this is a very delicate question, but it's a question that has been going on for a very long time. And there's a lot of history here, and there's so much history and understanding those words, and those words are so powerful, and that's why we love having guests like, you know, the Fetch come on, that, you know, you get into the word and what the word means now, but what it meant 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago, and it's derived from this term or that term. And when you start putting all this in context, then you start getting a bigger view of the picture. But as we can see, the Jewish question is a very complicated question. So with that said, I'd like to thank everyone for showing up tonight. And until next time, I will see you at the rendezvous.
Take care, man.
Good night.